Comedian Kathy Griffin informed New York Magazine that her friendship with CNN's Anderson Cooper is over. Cooper was reportedly shocked that she ever considered them to be friends in the first place. Trump Report starts now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
That was like a C-plus joke, but an F delivery, so that really didn't go over the way I wanted it to. Welcome to the Trump Report. I'm Christian Blatt on Twitter, at ChristianDMZ, and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. Don't forget that the show is at Trump Report ABTV, as in AfterBuzz TV. Well, if you're taking a look at the panel on YouTube, you noticed it's the manliest Trump Report we've ever had because it's just the fellas tonight. That's right. Now we're all men. As a matter of fact,
men.
Yeah, that's right. Little something that Jimbo and I talked about beforehand. Any excuse to play Orgasmo's Now You're a Man. Better than the theme song that I chose for tonight. Now You're a Man. Which, of course, is Pardon Me by Incubus. Mm-hmm. Which maybe we're going to talk about some pardons. But who are we going to talk to about said pardons? Why, it's Drexel Hurd at Drexel Hurd. Mm-hmm. Who, 1 week from tonight, is returning to the artist formerly known as Political Culture, currently and forevermore known as the Political Beat.
FKA,
the Political Beat. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And that'll be 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 Eastern on AfterBuzz.
That's right.
So,
same.
So check it out.
Same bat time, different bat channel than where the show used to be. Yep. But it'll be on right before us. And on the other end of the desk, the one, the only, Scott Moore at SMan80.
Hey guys!
Thank you, Scott, for being. We don't have any plugs for you, do we? Follow you on Twitter right, so that people can see you antagonize.
I'm plugless, but they can watch me troll everyone.
Mitch McConnell.
On Mitch McConnell.
Have there been any this week?
No, because he's been pretty quiet this week on his recess. Yeah, you know, he's
being respectful of the hurricane, unlike some people. Obviously, we do want to start off talking about Hurricane Harvey. And, of course, we always like to have fun here on the Trump Report, and tonight will be no different. But, of course, that fun will not come at the expense of the hurricane. But maybe we will call out some people who've tried to have some fun at the expense of the hurricane. And, you know, maybe you expected me to kick off the show tonight with the Scorpions' Rock You Like a Hurricane, and I did consider it, but I just felt like it was in bad taste. And so, to that end, there's a lot of ways you can help out everyone in Houston and the surrounding areas in Texas. One of those ways is the Red Cross. You can go to redcross.org, call 1-800-RED-CROSS, or if you text the word Harvey to 90999, that makes a $10 donation. Our thoughts go out to everyone there. I've got friends and family in the area, and I'm sure a lot of people do. So let's talk a little bit about the sides of a disaster like this. The fact that the disaster is happening, that's tragic, and we obviously hope everything starts to improve for the people there. But you do have people on both sides of the aisle that decided that this was a good opportunity to sort of try and make some political hay. You have people that have said that this is what happens when Texas voted for Trump. And Ann Coulter saying that God punishing Houston for electing a lesbian mayor is more credible than climate change. So she sort of did it in a very backhanded way. So she's just trying to say, like, I'm not saying that that's what's happening. I'm saying that's more believable than climate change. But, of course, you're still saying it. So I'm never surprised. I'm never surprised by anything like this. But just, I don't know. I was hoping for, I don't know what I wanted. Maybe something more clever.
From Ann Coulter?
No.
I know, right? I was like,
confused.
Really?
I'm like, well, certainly not going to be clever.
But that tells me, oh, she must have a new book that's going to be out soon. Because when she makes a tweet or a statement and all of a sudden it's like, oh, that was in really bad taste, and people start talking about it, it's only when she has a book coming out.
Right.
So I guess E Pluribus Awesome, the Donald Trump book that she wrote, probably I'm going to assume that sales have leveled off. But in any case, I also don't think we should go too far because people get hypersensitive about, you know, yes, I decided not to play Rock You Like a Hurricane. But at the same time, I kind of half expect the hypersensitive ESPN network to bully the New York Mets into not starting pitcher Matt Harvey against the Houston Astros on Friday. So you see, there is a line. There's a point where you can be respectful, but there's a point where it gets crazy. I wanted to talk a little bit, and you know, this isn't exactly what we prepped for, but if there's anything in the coverage that you've seen that the two of you have found encouraging, you know, just if it's an overall feeling, I mean, you have great little anecdotes that you've seen, just people who volunteered their time, mm-hmm. people who've worked very hard, people that are just taking boats around and rescuing neighbors and things. Drexel, I'll start with you. As you see the coverage of this kind of a disaster, I feel like it's obviously there's some tragedy, there's some loss of life, but the level of preparedness and obviously the geography prevented this from being something on the level of Hurricane Katrina.
Right. I think that from a coverage standpoint, obviously America has learned a couple of things in terms of how we react to natural disasters like this. It's obviously no denying that climate change is real and it is a part of that. And so I think from a couple of standpoints, it's very encouraging that this is at the forefront of people's mind. This is something that just does not happen in Texas, or in these parts of the South that people are like, why would this happen to a place like, you know, here? And on the other side of that, you start to see how people are helping out. Like, we're used to people kind of helping out in times of need. In natural disasters, I don't remember the aid from Katrina being as swift from Americans. But again, we learn from our mistakes. And I think everybody was ready. I don't think that this was something that Donald Trump needed as a complete failure. So the federal government has been doing what they need to do to help out Texas. I know that Governor Abbott has called up the entire Texas National Guard to help out. I was just reading where it said that between the federal and the city agencies, they've rescued more than 13,000 people over the past couple of days. But it's not just the federal and the city agencies that are helping out. It's people driving in from other cities with their boats and their trucks and their homes and different things like that that are encouraging to see. You see companies like Anheuser-Busch and Airbnb, and they are now opening, you know, from a business perspective, they're kind of putting that aside to kind of help people out. So that's also encouraging. But it always goes back to what Hillary Clinton always says. It does take a village to help out a group of people. So this is what we're seeing, and that's always very encouraging.
Yes, I think for the bad rumblings that you hear here and there, for the most part, it is a very encouraging scene. Obviously, the water rising, the additional rain that's coming. There's areas that have had 54 inches of rain, I believe I read, in the course of a few 50, days.
51.88, yeah. Which is the second most heaviest rainfall, not including a storm in Hawaii, but it's eclipsed Texas's all-time rainfall from the tropical system.
Yeah, that's right. It was a continental United States record.
But it's basically right there because it was 51.88, and I think it was 52 inches in Hawaii. So basically, mm-hmm. and that the place where it measured 51.88, that place failed after that point, so it could technically have topped the Hawaii record as well. So we're there.
It said new continental. It said the record.
Yes,
for continental.
But it was so close to the Hawaiian one that it could have theoretically beaten that. But the measurement failed. Was measuring the precip. So there's a chance that it actually did eclipse that. We won't know. And I actually wrote one of my weather buffs about that. I was like, we've got to find a way to make that to figure that out because these people are suffering through so much. But I'll bring up a couple points. First is. You know, the federal government did learn a lot from the failures of 2005 with Katrina, but what you had mentioned...
Let me interrupt, by the way. Brownie's still doing a heck of a job.
Yes.
I just want to make sure that everybody knows that. Anyway.
Also, before you... I think my mic is a little quiet. I don't know. That's what I'm being told.
You sound all right to me, but Shareable Texas, who's not in Texas,
you have to really, like, really love the mic.
Our thoughts are with Texas, but I believe Shareable Texas in the chat is not actually in Texas. So our thoughts are with him, but no, not any more than usual. Anyway, sorry. Scott, we've both interrupted you.
But I was going to say it's a unique situation. The federal government has learned a lot from 2005. This is also the first major hurricane to make landfall in the U.S. since 2005.
Right.
So it's really the first social media hurricane, if you take out Irene, and which was much more minor but hit a bigger population center of the Northeast, and Superstorm Sandy in 2012. This is the really first social media hurricane where you can get instant kind of updates, which back in 2005 we didn't. You know, and again, like you were bringing up, the geography was a little bit more unique with New Orleans being below sea level. We had a Democratic mayor, Democratic governor with a Republican administration. In Texas, if I'm going to be cynical, you have a Republican administration that's very supportive of the federal government's administration. You have a federal government that's going to make sure it looks at its peak the best that it can. Taking the cynical political side out of it, again, the federal government has learned a lot from its failures 12 years ago.
I also think that Hurricane Katrina was over Labor Day weekend, unless I'm mistaken.
It was today, today, 12 years ago today.
So, I think it was Labor Day, but maybe I'm wrong.
No, it's a little before Labor. It was like this time.
But at the same time, politics is like Hollywood. It is. Nobody's working this week. Nobody's working next week either.
Right? No, and then the other thing I'm going to bring up is the fact that this is a situation that's still unfolding. The rain is just letting up in Houston, so we have not even had an opportunity to really go in. It's in a rescue mode. But nobody really knows the extent of the damage and the extent of the possible property.
Dams have broken today.
And like unfortunately, unfortunately, the loss of life too, which that's still going to be unfolding, and the recovery in the next several weeks and months ahead. So we're just after today going to start that long recovery process. So we'll start to learn more in the next couple of days, and that's really where we're going to see how the federal and state government is really going to work and how FEMA is going to really work with the state government and the city government over the next weeks and months ahead, because right now we're still in the recovery overall period and the rain is just letting up today. So it's going to be an ongoing process and we'll see how that works and if they really have learned as much as we hope that they've learned. But yes, it's been very positive overall as far as most of the coverage and trying to keep the politics out of it.
And I think the other encouraging thing, and I don't know if it's necessarily encouraging or we just haven't had to deal with it just yet, is the fact that, you know, the Trump administration, first of all, you've got Mayor Turner, who's Houston's mayor, who's doing a great job. You've got Sean Hannity on TV giving the Houston mayor shit about his not evacuating the city. So obviously Fox News has their agenda on trying to politicize this. We haven't had an opportunity to look at how Donald Trump has reacted to this yet, because he hasn't really done much except for sign the governor's declaration of their
emergency declaration.
By the way, to be fair, I also this morning saw on CNN them giving Governor Abbott a hard time and saying, like, well, what do you think about not evacuating? So I think everybody's trying to get that great quote. But specifically to your point, Sean Hannity is definitely trying to
stir
to make hay out of this.
Yeah. But the other part of that, and this is something that we're, trying to cover a little bit differently on the political beat once the season comes back, which is, what is the administration's policy on that? And as we've seen from the beginning of the year, the Trump administration's policy, not necessarily is it going to be implemented, but from their viewpoint, they came off the gate wanting to reduce FEMA funds at the beginning. Mm-hmm. We're in a situation where the president has not nominated a FEMA director. There's nobody in charge right now. So it's really so FEMA is working off of former Obama appointees, career FEMA workers, as well as the governor is relying on his own National Guard. Now, this is a state's rights opportunity as well for cities to realize that, yes, they do have an opportunity to do things on their own, as well as with the aid of the federal government, because in certain cases, particularly with this administration, they're not going to help you. So, the American people are in a situation where we're having to come together in a way that we've never had to before for an area particularly that did not help the rest of the country out when it comes to other things.
Right, and like for Sandy as
right,
well.
For
they
Sandy.
Didn't want to vote for aid for those people.
Right. But the interesting thing about that I've seen is I've seen a number of sources say that the bill that the Ted Cruz's and so forth voted against for Hurricane Sandy was packed with a lot of things like money for Alaska and some other places, so the money wasn't going directly to New York. I didn't do the due diligence.
Well, no, but of course they do that all the time, which is what they're talking about for the budget stuff this year, is they're going to do the same thing to force Republicans to vote on it on things they don't want to do either. And that happens all the time. Not saying it's right or wrong, and not saying that politically Democrats in other areas are going to say no to aid to Texas, because clearly they're going to need it, as this will be, if not the costliest hurricane on record, will likely surpass Katrina. It will definitely be the second costliest hurricane.
Yeah, and you do and hope
need to recover.
These situations do go beyond politics.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that the outrage around Hurricane Katrina was, sure, it was directed at President Bush and his administration. Mm-hmm. But if he had done a good job, if he had done a heck of a job, like he said Brownie did, I it wouldn't have been the same, you know, reaction to it. But one thing that, at least until this morning, the hurricane wasn't bigger than was religion. With Joel Osteen deciding that he did not want to open the doors of his megachurch. And as the term megachurch implies, thousands of people can go in there. And they did open their doors today. I guess that the seas parted briefly, and then God spoke to him and said, "This is really bad PR, Joel, and we know you're not a real Christian, but we got to get you. We got to get you in there." And that's what a lot of people are saying. People very far on the right are saying, "Like, well, of course he didn't let us in because he's not a real Christian." And now people are realizing this.
Right.
So I'm sort of making light of that aspect of his persona. But that's a terrible thing.
True.
You have a huge building. That would be like if the, you know, the city of Houston was like, "Oh, we've got a convention center." No.
But we're keeping it closed because we're going to have a good concert here
in
the next couple of days. We want it to be clean.
Incubus is going to play.
We want it clean, and we want to make sure we can sell everything, so we're not going to.
Which, by the way, this is just sort of a quick aside, something I saw on Twitter. The Houston Astros, Houston Texans, and the I forget one other team. I think actually the Dallas Cowboys all donated literally millions of dollars to relief, which is great because the Houston Rockets, that's who it was.
Dallas, and a lot of players.
Yeah, yeah. J.J. Watt. I saw a lot of players. And you just you like to see that sort of
stuff. Absolutely.
Joel Osteen could not be bothered to even open the door. But eventually, he did come around.
But that's not necessarily surprising. I was reading something the other day about 700 Club.
Mm-hmm.
Who's that?
Pat Robertson.
Yep.
And I was reading.
Which, by the way, if you're getting ready for the apocalypse, Pat Robertson has your food boxes.
There was something in an article that I was reading that said they had spent some time with Pat Robertson, and his reaction to certain things was all about profit. And I think that people really have to, you know, we talk about them not being Christian. Like, I grew up in a Christian household, as I'm sure a lot of people did. The hypocrisy of certain Christians should not surprise anybody.
Right.
The hypocrisy of Joel Osteen, who I have watched several times because I like to parody him anytime that I pretend I'm a preacher. Somewhere like the big teeth, like it's easily parodied.
He's like the Ted McGinley of Christianity.
Yeah. I mean,
better known as from Married with Children, and I actually forgot his character name as I was literally opening my mouth.
Mr. Darcy. I'd be interested to see, and I don't know the congregation. If the pressure from the congregation was something that made him change his mind, or was it outside
people? I think it was the outside.
Because if it was not the congregation pushing him to make these changes, obviously I'm sure a lot of them were affected in their families, but they need to take a hard look at who they're being led by.
And who they're giving money to.
Because if the church is not a place of, if it's not a, not only a spiritual sanctuary, but a sanctuary for the physical body, then it's not a sanctuary at all. And I think in this case, we're seeing that a mega church like Lakewood, Lakeview, we could not figure this out.
We have Google in the studio, but we did not utilize it
right before we went on. But might not be the place that they think it is, and I think that some people are going to have to take a very hard look.
You can look around and find a new church home. I definitely agree.
Definitely.
With that. Look, it's not a Republican who said don't let a good crisis go to waste, but it was definitely a Republican who took advantage of it because. On the onset of Hurricane Harvey, we have President Trump, who I guess thinking from the old school of the Friday afternoon media dump, not taking into consideration the 24-hour news cycle, the round-the-clock hurricane coverage, tried to sneak a few things through. He tried to sneak through the transgender ban in the military. That was Friday afternoon. He tried to sneak through the Sebastian Gorka resignation, and he was trying to offset that with his pardon of Joe Arpaio. So
where do you
like to take those in order? I would like to, and I just have a hunch that might be the end of the show after we get through all three of those.
No.
I've got a lot of other things I could talk about, but that's probably where we're going to end up. But let's start off talking about the transgender ban and using that as the time to try and sneak it through. I'll start with you, Drexel.
I mean, it's no surprise where I stand on the transgender ban. coming from a military family, I've had, and I think I've said this on the show before, there's been many conversations about what that means for the military and where we've come over the past, you know, century, half a century, in building a smarter, more diverse, more inclusive military. Is something that people, A, should be proud of as Americans, because we do have the most diverse military. Mm-hmm. And if somebody wants to fight for your country, you should be, if you're not the one that's going out there to fight, why are you worried about somebody else wanting to fight? And I think that that's something that people really have to take a hard look at, again, like a good Christian would, and say, yeah, I'm not man enough to go fight in the military, but I'm worried about who else is fighting in the military. So if you're worried about somebody else being fighting in the military, maybe you should get in there as well. When it comes to the transgender ban, obviously, Lambda Legal and ACLU have mm-hmm. already filed lawsuits
against individual service members.
Right. And I think that, again, we're going to run. I'm very interested to see what the court does, because when it comes to national security issues, typically the court sides with the president. But I think in this instance, it is excluding Americans. And I think that that is something that the courts will have to decide whether or not is constitutional. On the other side of that, we had a really weird weekend where cabinet officers were distancing themselves mm-hmm. from the president and Rex yes. Tillerson. Mm-hmm. But even today, James Mattis sent had a statement out today on the transgender ban. Service by transgender individuals, which is what he said. He said, the Department of Defense has received the president's memorandum. I'm going to paraphrase this just a little bit. The department will carry out the president's policy direction. Now, that's very specific. Not the department's policy, not how the department feels. The president's policy, which kind of says, yeah, we get it. The president's mm-hmm. the president. We got to do our jobs. In consultation with the Department of Homeland Security. As directed, we will develop... This is the slow walk.
Mm-hmm.
This is the start of the slow walk. As directed, we will develop a study and implementation plan which will contain the steps that will promote military readiness, lethality, and unit cohesion. So this is already starting to sound like they really don't want to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it says... This is the really interesting part. Our focus must always be on what's best for military's combat effectiveness, leading to victory on the battlefield. To that end, I will establish a panel of experts serving within the Department of Defense and Homeland Security. Panel members will bring mature experience, most notably in combat and deployed operations. So I think that what we're going to see is the generals who really were not interested in implementing this policy are who James Mattis is going to listen to mm-hmm. at the end of the day and how it's implemented. And I think it's going to take a little bit of time to implement what the president wants, because I don't think that the career generals are really thinking that this is a problem. And if they're going to go back to that, they're going to slow walk this until Trump is out of office, and then it's not going to be implemented at all. But at least Trump can call it a win on his part. But at the end of the day, from a military standpoint, I don't think that it's going to be something that it's going to lose in the court, and it's obviously losing within the Department of Defense and Homeland Security.
Now, I've got a quicker fix that I feel like could give us our answer, you know, pretty much instantaneously within a couple minutes. How about President Trump tries to arm wrestle any transgender member of the military? And if he wins, then I guess the ban goes in place.
Sure. No, the ban.
Michael Halpern. I wonder if he's related to like Michael Halpern.
Oh, he could be. Yeah.
He said, and colleagues will likely block recruitment if it's allowed to stand. Which
colleges is, not, is I co- believe what he said. Yeah.
Colleges. What
colleges. I don't know, actually. Blocking
colleagues.
Recruitment.
I don't think that's obviously not something that's been happening, because there are service members there are trans service members who
of
are
course.
Service. There are gay service. I actually saw a friend of mine who I did not, an acquaintance of mine, who I didn't realize had joined the Army.
Oh, okay.
Like the gayest person one of the gayest people I know has joined the Army. And so I think that's what you're starting to see is recruiters don't really care. A, they need the numbers. And people are, look, if Michael Halperin is a service member, a thank you for your service. If you're not, take a seat, because obviously you're not doing what you think you should be doing. But you have an opinion on what other people should be doing. So I think that, again, people have to take a look at who is actually willing to serve. And in this case, recruiters are always looking at that. If you're willing to serve the country, I don't think they care who is serving the country as long as they do a good job on the battlefield or in the office, which is where a lot of people are in general.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, essentially what you said earlier, I'm not serving. When I was younger and stronger and healthier, I also wasn't serving then. So I didn't feel like I was really invested in who was and who wasn't. I mean, obviously I felt, you know, that gays should be allowed to serve in the military, because when I was younger, that was a much bigger issue. We had Don't Ask, Don't Tell for so long. And I feel like I would not stop anyone from serving. And I feel like those who aren't serving, well, you know, could probably stay out of it.
Which, but I would say the president himself should stay out of it because he never served. And let's be honest, as Drexel said, it is blatant discrimination. The studies were already done during the Obama administration. It's a way to, again, retract something that Obama had done. The studies were done. There was a cohesive strategy that was put into place. There was no reason to do this except to pander to a small base. And again, the fact of the matter is, like Drexel said, I have a military family. My cousins were in the military as well. I have a second cousin who identifies as transgender, and to say that and his father was in the Marines, and to say that you know, people that are willing to sacrifice their life for your freedom and you're telling them that they cannot serve only because they're transgender is blatant discrimination. And again, like you said, it's not going to hold up. Mattis is going to try to slow walk it. The courts are going to put, I think, a stop to it. The amount of money that's spent for reassignment surgery is much less than what we spend on Viagra and much other things, or to protect Trump when he flies down to Mar-a-Lago. So there's really no basis for it, and it's frankly disgusting that he would even try to do that, and to do it on a Friday evening during the midst of a Category 4 hurricane is making landfall.
The ratings would be high.
I think I
understand what he's saying now.
This is Michael Halperin in the chat for those listening on iTunes.
Rewind what I said. I get what you're saying now. For folks that are listening, he was saying that colleges would block. That's what the colleges think. Where we were thinking, colleagues or colleges.
Yeah, yeah.
Colleges will block recruiters from not coming on campus if they are discriminating against people. Got it. Understood. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of that, people who do feel like that. Probably should. I mean, I know a lot of people who are not serving who have a lot of opinions about
that. Right, exactly. And they shouldn't. And I don't think, 140 House members or whatever also spoke up against the ban. I mean, I think they're all Democrats.
Paul Ryan speaking up is like that tree that falls in the forest that you don't really know if it makes a sound. Because you almost feel like on just across the spectrum, no one's listening to Paul Ryan right now. So I just feel, and we talked about this.
I haven't seen him in months.
Yeah.
He's not come out of the hiding in months.
He's like Howard Hughes. He just, you know, dispatches memos that other people.
He's hiding in Mitch McConnell's turtle shell.
Yes. And he comes out. Because he doesn't have a spine, so he's got to hide in McConnell's turtle shell to be able to keep himself.
Well, let's move on to the second of our three items that were part of President Trump's big media dump. Sebastian Gorka, you know, this was a resignation, but, you know, one of those resignations like Steve Bannon.
Resignation in quotes.
Yeah, we're using air quotes. Yeah. Again, not surprising. This seems like another one where General Kelly was like, you're gone, you're gone, you're gone. Here's the schedule. You know, and as we talked about last week, they had to move up Steve Bannon's because he wouldn't shut his mouth. So, you know, Gorka, it was probably like, this Friday, right before the weekend, you're going to be gone. Oh, there's a hurricane. That's right. We're going to do it anyway.
Right. Even better.
Yeah. Scott, I'll start with you this time. What do you think this is about? Why he's no longer part of the White House?
Well, I think it goes back to what you're saying with Kelly. I think if Kelly could, he'd probably get rid of Trump too. That would solve a lot of problems. But he can't, so he's getting rid of all the other bad kind of influences.
No, because if he did,
that's
called a coup.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. He can't, because that would be
more. Boy,
this
show
coup
would be more interesting. And no, I'm not advocating that.
The Kelly report.
I'm just saying that it's a joke. We're not advocating that.
We're not advocating a coup. No. Yeah. But yeah, the point is
a hostile takeover. That's different.
I was trying to think, like, who's going to be let go this Friday before a long weekend, before Labor Day weekend? Who are they going to try to boot?
Pence.
I hope.
They've already let him go.
Yeah, that's true. They have.
We haven't seen him in a while.
I know.
So anyway, sorry.
So I think, you know, this has been part of the plan, is that they were trying to say it was a resignation. We know it was more or less a firing, and that he was let go. And Kelly really is trying to clean house from all these bad influences with Trump, because he is trying to kind of get the house in order here, and get the president back on track, because even though he's his own worst enemy, Trump, he's surrounded himself by people who are not helping him, or, you know, the federal government moving their agenda forward. And I'm actually surprised it took this long. Again, it was one of those things I thought Gorka would have been out weeks ago.
So if
months ago, actually,
if General Kelly is going to get rid of all the bad influences on President Trump, does that mean he's going to try and convince Ivanka to get divorced so that Jared Kushner is no longer around giving what is apparently stellar advice, the best advice? Sorry, Drexel, I did want to give you a chance.
Apparently, Ivanka and Jared are not happy about living in D.C. at this point, but
have you ever been there in the summer?
Neither were Sasha and Malia, and then they were like, you know, 10 and 14 at the time, and they kind of got over it. And they have, you know, they didn't have nearly as much money.
They didn't have cabinet positions either.
They weren't working in the White House.
I feel really bad for them.
But I think there's two things that happened over the weekend. So Seb Gorka kept saying that he resigned.
Right.
The White House basically kept saying he was fired. And so it's just a matter of who people believed. And I think at this point, most people believe, shockingly, the White House. This time around, we believe the White House. But I think, you know, I always said that as soon as Kelly came in, not only Sean Spicer had to go, Sarah Huckabee Sanders has to go, Kelly and Con, like the entire beginning fleet.
Mm-hmm.
Has to go.
In fact, I'm still surprised Kellyanne Conway's still there. I keep thinking she was going to be gone long ago.
Yeah, so I shocked. And Omarosa, there is no reason for some of these people to be.
I feel like Omarosa is the one person who isn't making waves. You know, she's right. actually like she's, keeping her head down making, and getting her
but
job.
She's
done.
Making more waves with the black community,
right?
Mainly because she's kind of showed up in a couple of places that have not been very.
She went to a Jay-Z concert. Would not be welcoming to
99
Trump.
And she was.
she was the one problem there.
I think that General Kelly would do well to clean that entire house out. At the same time, you're starting to see resignations happen at the RNC as well, with people leaving because of this administration. So Roma. What's her name? I almost called her Roma Downey, but she's touched by
an angel. Also touched by Mark Burnett.
Touched by Mark Burnett. Roma McDaniel Romney, RNC chair.
Like that Romney?
That Romney. She's Mitt Romney's sister. Yes. She's the RNC chair. She will have a challenge of keeping career Republicans around if she does not she's a big Trump supporter. So she's going to have a problem controlling the future of her party if she's so fixated on this one guy. She's got to think long term, and with the resignation starting to happen, I think she's going to see that. And I think, but on the White House side, General Kelly's just going to have to let go of more people.
And I think that's what's going to happen. None of the people that get let go in the future will probably be anyone involved with the pardon of Sheriff Joe Arpaio. And President Trump, in the wake of the pardon, has made the point that all presidents make bad pardons. Mark Rich, not a great pardon. Bradley Manning, later Chelsea Manning. Yeah, I mean, that's not a great pardon.
It was a commutation. It was not a pardon.
And personally, I talked about this when it happened. Oscar Lopez Rivera, who was literally a terrorist who planted a bomb at a restaurant Francis Tavern in New York City, that it, well, his organization did. He did not actually plant the bomb. His organization, the FALN, planted a bomb that killed a number of people, including a gentleman named Frank Connor. And over the years, I've gotten to know his son, Joseph Connor, who's very outspoken about this. And so that was a very bad pardon. And Drexel drove me crazy when your friend Lin-Manuel Miranda tweeted about how happy he was and how this is a great day. And I don't usually tweet angry things at people in the media, but I was like, you know, he's a murderer, right? But right. He didn't write back to me. but that's why I'm glad that I saw Hamilton without him, because I can't even think about that guy since. But none of those pardons were made as a hurricane was basically drenching a major, I think it's the fourth largest city in the country. So yes, bad pardons happen all the time, but that was not good timing for a bad pardon.
Right.
And I mean, we can talk about the timing of it, we can talk about all that, but we should also get to all of our thoughts on Sheriff Joe being pardoned. And I have a statement from our friend Chelsea, who's not here tonight, which I will read. In short, I'm livid. This is one of the first, this is all from our friend Chelsea, at Chelsea Galicia, by the way, if you want to tell her what you think of the statement. This is one of the first times that I have a strong emotional reaction to some idiotic Trump action. Arpaio is evil incarnate, and he got away with it, and is now a nod to all law enforcement officers who are thinking of breaking the law to, quote, do their job, that Trump will have their back if they get caught. This is infuriating. This is dangerous. Plus, I don't understand how this fits with the whole law and order thing, because Arpaio broke the law, was told to stop, and didn't. She did censor herself, but she did write out, fuck him. My legal mind goes to this. Presidential pardons are only valid for crimes against the United States, meaning convictions for federal crimes, not civil rights violations or state crimes. I'm sure there are a number of pardons historically that would fall into that latter category. This is a pardon that I can't even understand the process of how you can unpardon someone, which I don't think you can.
You can't.
Yeah.
Cannot.
So that's what I say. I think that that's the whole point, because I think maybe somebody would have not been thrilled with Nixon's pardon if I just had to have a guess. It's off the top of my head. But anyway, I wanted to get Chelsea's comments on the record, since even though she's not here. But
she will be on.
She will be on the Political Beat Tuesdays at 6 Pacific,
starting September 5th,
on AfterBuzz TV.
I do want to start out by explaining to people who might not know the difference between a sentence being commuted,
right? Which was you're right about Bradley Manning. Big difference. Yes, it is different.
And just so I'm not mincing it up, like a commutation is a replacement of a greater amount by something lesser. So, for example, President Obama pardoned 1,300 sentences of people who had like an ounce of like who had low drug offense, you know, and then of course Chelsea Manning, but it's different from a pardon where it just wipes it completely.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things that I think, obviously, Joe, we could go on and on about the case that Joe Arpaio had, which I believe was a criminal case.
But the short of it is that the accusations, the charges were about racial profile.
Right. But I think that people also forget, like we're talking about an 86-year-old man, and I tweeted out the other day, your age does not excuse
your deeds.
Mm-hmm. No matter how old you are, you know, if Joe Arpaio had been an 86-year-old Hispanic guy or black guy who had done these things, the idea that the American people or that people on the right would have said, yeah, this guy deserves a pardon, would not have happened. And I think that you see, you know, just to kind of go over a quick list, you know, you've got torturing Latinos, not only non-citizens, but actual citizens, just because they look Hispanic.
They look like they were.
They didn't know. Mm-hmm. You might have looked Hispanic. Hey, check mark on that. Chaining up pregnant women in camps. Mm-hmm. He had tent cities all over the place that he called concentration camps. Like, you're not talking about just somebody. These are deliberate things that are happening to American citizens.
And kept them out in the heat.
Kept them out in the heat. 114 degree weather.
In the summer.
I was listening to Pod Saves America today. That's a plug there. Mm-hmm. where it said, Jon Favreau was talking about how he would make them, make the people out in the heat watch the Weather Channel so they could see what the weather was like in other cities, and how great it was for other people, and how they were feeling, and how They would only have like two meals a day of like bologna and like a piece. I don't know, something crazy.
Yeah, and look, I think that obviously that is all very misguided and certainly not the way we should be treating anyone, regardless of the fact of whether or not they committed crimes. I think that Arpaio is sort of a victim of his own success in the way that first it was like, oh, that's the sheriff that has inmates wear pink because jail's not supposed to be fun or cool or whatever. Right. But then Snowball's a really bad example because we're talking about the Arizona heat. Mm-hmm. So it dust storms,
right,
and it does go on to the – yeah. I mean, as soon as you're having tent cities, you know, if you have a tent city in a lot of places, it's not that big a deal. But – yeah, 114 degrees. And, I mean, there's times where it gets to, like, 120 in Phoenix.
Right. And I think this is stuff – this is, you know, we always say history repeats itself. This is stuff that we did to the Japanese
– right.
So long ago that we're in 2017. We're in 2015, 16, 17, whatever, 2015 – where this is actually happening, and we're seeing it, and we're not stopping it. And you know, obviously, he didn't win. Joe Arpaio didn't win his race, his re-election. You know, his re-election. Mm-hmm. And Maricopa County was actually had a lot of problems, not only with him but with the voting, as we saw in the last mm-hmm. election. So Maricopa County has a lot of issues going on. But I also saw that Arpaio is interested in possibly challenging Jeff Flake.
I was going to mention that, yeah,
for the Senate, and Roger Stone, who was very instrumental in getting Joe Arpaio this pardon, right, is now looking at Cliven Bundy as the next pardon for Donald Trump. So mm-hmm. he's actively working on Cliven Bundy, who we all know kind of defied federal orders, right, in evacuating
federal land. Yeah.
And the reason he's still alive is that he's a white guy.
Bingo.
Yep, exactly.
You know, you can say that.
Yeah, exactly. I can say that.
And it's true. Here's two other interesting things, too. One is that we were talking about the bad pardons that presidents have done in the past, and I've often said as a hardcore liberal that I didn't agree with Mark Rich's pardon from Bill Clinton. However, most of the time, presidents wait for their bad pardons until their last day in office.
It's literally the last day in office.
And so they can walk away, yeah, and they're gone.
And there's like 30 to 100 people. Yes. And, you know, everybody has to look like, wait, who? And, you know, now in the days with Google, it's a lot easier. But you used to have to, wait, who's this?
Through,
and you
got
to
go
through. It took a couple of days to figure out who got pardoned.
And they're already long gone, yeah, into the sunset.
Yeah.
But now you have a president who went 7 months in and decided to do a controversial pardon already. Whether or not you agree with it or not, you know, it's the fact that I'm thinking, okay, if he started with Arpaio, where is he going to end up at? Because it's mind-boggling to me of where he's going to go from here. Besides all the other issues that Arpaio has and everything else, it sets a very bad tone, not only from what Chelsea had said about, you know, law enforcement and now sheriffs and other places are going to look and think what they can get away with. But also, if you're thinking back to the Russia investigation and you're starting to think, okay, who is he now going to pardon, affiliated with family members, friends, colleagues, where is that going to stop? Because it's very chilling when you think that he's going to start with Arpaio and then thinking this Russian probe is going on.
Yeah, oddly enough, he's going to pardon everybody except Jeff Sessions.
Yes,
he's the one guy he's not going to pardon.
And that is very frightening for most people thinking of democracy and everything else and the sunlight of knowing what's going on and having, you know, the clarity to see that these people that might have been having the threat of, okay, we'll reduce your jail time or we'll, you know, give you, forgetting the word now, you know, if you do a deal and you're going to be able to talk about somebody, they won't give you the
immunity.
Punishment. Yes, immunity. Yes. There we go. Couldn't think of it. But if you take that off the plate, off the table now by saying, well, now Trump will just pardon you, then you're going to be, you know, you have no reason now to be able to go out and start telling the truth because you think, well, I'll just be pardoned regardless. But that's scary.
But I also want to just touch on that point real quick because I know people are kind of fixated on the idea that Donald Trump might throw some blanket pardons out.
Mm-hmm.
On the Joe Arpaio piece of it, I think that there is a civil case that can be brought against Joe Arpaio at this point. So I'm sure somebody will, and he'll have to go through that legal process because the pardon does not
cover shield civil him, or state shield him or from any
that,
other things.
From that piece of it. Mm-hmm. So I could see that happening in the next few months.
Yes,
That he's going to have to deal with that and a lot of legal fees, and then I'm sure a lot of people are going to set up a GoFundMe for him. Mm-hmm. But on the other side of that, you've got Donald Trump. This is kind of a catch-22 for Donald Trump. He can either pardon these people. He can either let these people do their job, and it's going to be bad for him, or he can pardon them, and it's going to be bad for him. Because if he pardons them, then congressional Republicans will have no choice but to look at it as an obstruction of justice.
Right.
And that will immediately start to start impeachment processes. Like they don't have a
choice. I hope.
You would think. You would
I would think.
You know, but it will also, you know, if that happens between now and then, Republicans are doomed in 2018 mm-hmm. because there's no way that Democrats and independents would not come out in droves to check the president from a congressional standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then immediately impeachment processes would start because Democrats are going to be like, well, here we are.
Yeah.
That's it. So I think either way, the president has, if his mind is in the swiftest way that he thinks something is going to go away, and that is by pardoning people, it's going to make, in my opinion, it's going to make it worse on the other side for him because Republican senators are already saying there's no way they're trying to, the fact that Republican senators are trying to like shield Robert Mueller from the president is mm-hmm. a signal that any obstruction is not going to be tolerated.
I certainly hope so. I'm very nervous because he's gotten away with so much. But the other fun fact I would say is, like you were saying, is that basically accepting a pardon is an admission of guilt. So, I mean, it really is.
No,
I mean,
I'm
that's
laughing
the thing.
Because you're right. Yeah.
Because, so basically, by accepting a pardon, you are saying you are guilty of these crimes. You don't get it both ways. You don't just say, okay, well, I'm taking the pardon, but I didn't really do it. You're basically admitting guilt, and now you're being sort of forgiven for that crime and having to go through the punishment. So you do bring up a good point on that.
Michael Halpern in the chat mentions that he can't pardon any impeachable offenses, so the Russia investigation is safe.
But that
we'd
that's
have to
not
look deeper
too.
Into that.
I'm like, impeachable to who?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Not to other outside.
Well, he can't
people.
Obviously pardon himself, right. But that's what Pence is there for.
Right, but he can't. But
that's right. Pence is the next Gerald Ford. You heard it here first.
Exactly. As I've said from the beginning,
nobody else can be in. Like nobody else is impeached.
We only have a couple minutes, and I wanted to very quickly touch on the North Korean missile that, look at that. That's not Godzilla flying over Tokyo. It wasn't Tokyo, but over Japan. And should we be more worried about this guy than we have been? Because I'm still not, but the missile didn't go over my backyard. Drexel, and by this guy, of course, I mean Kim Jong-un.
Here's the thing. I think that you've got this kid, this 34-year-old kid who's trying to flex his muscle.
Mm-hmm. Millennials being, really do ruin everything.
They do.
but he's not licking donuts like Ariana Grande. I love Ariana Grande, by the way. But I think that he is putting himself in a situation. He feels isolated because China's already put the foot on them, which we talked about last mm-hmm. week. And South Korea is obviously not their friend. Donald Trump's making, you know, he's kind of in a Twitter war, like a war of statements with Donald Trump. So I think he's trying to flex some muscle. For it to go over Japan didn't really make any sense because Japan is an ally.
Yeah.
Not only to the United States, but to several other countries. So I don't think that it, you know, to the United States, because he could easily step back and be like, you know what? Japan has other allies. We'll let them kind of handle that region and that might be smart for the president to do, to say, you know what, it's not the United States' fight right now, but it could also backfire on him and say that's an ally, and the allies could be like, the United States wasn't there to help
us. Judging from North Korea's history, the reason it went over Japan could very well be that was the missile that they were going to send to Guam, and just their aim was so far off it went over Japan,
right? Because it is just past August and they were supposed to have that missile at Guam in the mid-August.
Our last thought on this, Scott, when you hear this, you hear Kim Jong-un having missiles go high above the land of the rising sun. What do you think?
I'm just saying, he's shooting blanks. But, you know, again, like Drexel saying, he's trying to get attention, and this is the best way he can, by doing things like this to be provocative. But he knows, and we know, like we've talked about in weeks past, going into war is not going to be the answer, because the loss of life, the economic damage, everything is so not worth it right now. Yes, we're going to have to figure out a way to get him to stop. But he's doing it for attention because he knows it's basically a suicide mission to be able to provoke us so far that we and our allies in the region go in for a full force war, because of course they could bulldoze their way through North Korea. The problem is it's the aftermath. It's a loss of life in South Korea and Seoul, which is like 30 miles from the border. It's the power vacuum. It's so many things that we also just do not have the ability to do. We're already spread thin with the military. Now that we have a transgender ban, you know, there's even less people that are going to be going to the military. We're trying to get more troops into Afghanistan. We're still out in the Middle East. We do not have the ability to go in and be in a prolonged war over there. And it would just be absolutely devastating for everyone involved, not only Japan and South Korea, but of course for us and North Korea and China. And
everybody.
And then we have a big issue of who's going to take control of North Korea. And then, you know, you have a power play between China and the U.S. and allies. And it's just not something that we want to get involved with. And it's not an easy solution. And, you know, they technically never have had peace in the past 60 years from that war. And it's something that, again, we'd be something invested in for another 20, 30 years besides the Middle East. And it's not something anyone wants.
And I think Sepp Gorka gave the game away last week. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure he gave away some national security
issue. When he said that, there might be a reason why those missile tests have been failing. I'm not going to say anything, but I'm not sure that's something we probably should have known.
No.
Well, cool. We're going to leave it on that. We will be back next Tuesday, September 5th, right after the Political Beat, FKA Political Culture, with our friends Drexel Hurd, at Drexel Hurd, and Chelsea Galicia, at Chelsea Galicia. That'll be here on AfterBuzz TV. Hey, the Trump Report, that's us. We'll still be here for you at 7 Pacific, but in the weeks ahead, you'll start to notice, hey, that show's a lot funnier than it used to be. We're going to try and ramp up the funny over here on this show, which we think will be the best way to complement the Political Beat. And you'll still see a lot of the same faces. Drexel and Chelsea will still be on sometimes. Right. But you'll see some new ones, and we're going to try some different things. So think more like The Daily Show than like Meet the Press, if we're lucky. But we will see you next Tuesday, September 5th at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. Follow us at Trump Report ABTV. For Scott Moore at S-Man80, I'm Christian Blatt at ChristianDMZ. We'll see you next Tuesday.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.